Hello, this is Melissa, and today is the 5th of May, 2024. I hope that you're all doing well. It is very wet here. It has just been raining. A lot of stormy weather for the last several weeks, but this last week has just been one rainstorm after another. Had a little bit of a power outage last night. Back in the fall, I did a real history by myself. I had a cancellation and something in the news caught my attention, and that was the story of Buffy St. Marie, the singer from the 60s, 70s, kind of in that folk circuit, who was being accused of being a pretendian, a fake Indian. And I just looked into it and simply shared my reaction to the story and my opinion. And it was one of those things that just, for me, it had a lot of viewers and a lot of negative reaction, because a lot of people in Canada are big fans of Buffy St. Marie and they thought that this was a terrible hit piece. And I had appeared to jump on board there. So at the time, someone sent me something that I had said about the 60 scoop. Someone sent me a series of articles that were essentially saying that a story that was released in 2021 about mass graves of residential school Indian children in Canada, that this wasn't true, that it had been blown out of proportion, and they had, you know, stacks and stacks of articles, and it never seemed to fit in with anything that I was thinking of week to week. Interesting, but I can't address everything that I am sent or that I look at, and so I left that one alone until today. The same person sent me another link to a news story, and it's just the way that it kind of tied in with what I was thinking about other things that I decided to get into this and share a little bit with you. So the story that the listener sent me today is about the mayor of Quesnel in British Columbia, who was censured and banned from First Nations land. It said the council voted unanimously to censure Ron Paul. That's what his name looks like. It's got two L's, but it could be Powell, I don't know, but Ron Paul, and relieve him of duties at an emotional meeting. The mayor of Quesnel, BC, has been stripped of many of his duties and barred from entering land belonging to multiple First Nations in and around his community. On Tuesday night, Quesnel's city council voted unanimously to censure Ron Paul and impose multiple restrictions on his ability to represent the city. The decision is in response to reports that Powell's wife has given out copies of a controversial book about residential schools to people in the community, and that Powell himself had offered the book to other elected officials at a local government meeting. In response, that the leaders of the First Nations there, I won't try to say their names, have said that they will refuse to work with Powell, who is no longer welcome on land belonging to this tribe. The story thrust the community of roughly 23,000 people located about 400 kilometers north of Vancouver into the national spotlight as a flashpoint in the ongoing conversation about residential schools and Canada's efforts at reconciliation with Indigenous communities. But Powell says while he may have made an error in judgment, he has no plans to leave his position. I have four loves, he said. My wife, Pat, my family and friends, my wonderful community of Quesnel, and my faith. I wholeheartedly intend on continuing to give back to my community. The book that his wife was distributing was entitled Grave Error: How the Media Misled Us and the Truth About Residential Schools. The book is a series of essays edited by C.P. Champion and Tom Flanagan, described by its publisher as challenging several assertions made about the harms of residential schools. In publicity material for the book, publishers True North and Dorchester Books say statements that residential schools traumatized Indigenous people across generations and destroyed Indigenous languages and culture are either totally false or grossly exaggerated. The book is particularly critical of media reports in 2021, which announced preliminary findings of ground-penetrating radar work at the former Kamloops residential school. The Nation has said they found anomalies that could be unmarked graves of children who attended the school, while clarifying that that possibility had yet to be confirmed. I'll post this article and you can look at it, but this mayor has been censured because his wife handed out this book. Now, there are many different organizations and journalists who have attacked these stories that came out in 2021. And so some of you might not have been following along. I'll try to recap that for you quickly. In May of 2021, I was in Canada alone. Alan had passed away. I lived far removed from even a small town, several kilometers from anybody. And it was quiet in a way that never bothered me when Alan was alive. But when he was there, there was always something, some kind of activity in the house, a video playing and news on the radio. Alan, he fed his brain constantly. And the quiet without him was unbearable. And so I had just begun having the radio on a lot, even though I often wasn't taking it in or hearing it. It just made me feel less alone. And in May, the big story was, this is the end of May, that the First Nation had announced that this ground-penetrating radar had discovered what they said were the remains of more than 200 children at this Indian residential school. They had a news conference. It was huge. It ran everywhere. The CBC, the New York Times, it was a major story at the time. And Prime Minister Justin Trudeau issued an apology for those whose lives were taken at Kamloops. He ordered Canadian flags to be flown at half-mast, and they would remain lowered for about 6 months. Pope Francis said that he was shocked at the discovery of the remains in an address that he made in June. Church communities reacted. Many congregations did. They set out 215 pairs of child-sized shoes on their front steps. This is like the yellow ribbon. You see what I'm saying? It's become a... There's a visual component to the story that captures people's imaginations. And for that period of, it was quite a while. I mean, it seemed to me that for at least 2 weeks solid, this was the only story that I heard on the radio. It was covered by everyone in a variety of ways. The interesting thing is that I'm not sure how long it took, but I think it was possibly a year later, in May of 2022, several papers ran a denying this original story. And this is from the New York Post. Biggest fake news story in Canada. Kamloops mass grave debunked by academics. 1 year ago today, the leaders of the British Columbia First Nation band, Tecumloops, sorry for slaughtering that America, announced the discovery of a mass grave of more than 200 Indigenous children detected at a residential school in British Columbia. We had a knowing in our community that we were able to verify. To our knowledge, these missing children are undocumented deaths. The band called the discovery, there's a term there they use, or the missing. What's still missing, however, according to a number of Canadian academics, is proof of the remains in the ground. Since last year's announcement, there have been no excavations at Kamloops, nor any dates set for any such work to commence. The alleged burial ground, which is said to include 215 bodies, some as young as 3 years old, was located with the help of ground-penetrating radar. The number of bodies was based on irregularities in the ground ascertained by the radar waves. I am going to post several stories about this, and if you are interested, you can follow up on those. One of the interesting stories, though, that I saw came out in October of last year, because everything now in the world of news or propaganda or information versus misinformation is dissected, debunked, and this story was certainly no exception. So you've got the first story that breaks in May of 2021, and then in May of 2022, you have it denounced as a hoax, as fake news. And here is October of 2023 from The Conversation. We fact-checked residential school denialists and debunked their mass grave hoax theory. Now, I'm almost going to leave this one entirely for those interested to read it. But you can get right off the bat that if you don't agree with the initial story as it came out in May of 2021, then you are a denialist. And they hit you with statistics in this particular article, which I found very interesting. They give you the cherry-picked evidence. And they're saying myths are often based in some fact, and they selectively picked their evidence. They cherry-picked it. And they go on to tell you how many articles were reviewed, how many of the articles actually used the term mass graves, what percentage of the articles used that term, and then it keeps breaking it down, and they get to the point, they say, that of the 386 total articles, only 25, just 6.5% of total articles, referred to the findings as mass graves, with most of the articles appearing in a short window of time. All right, think about this. They don't tell you which papers they looked at or magazines that total this 386, nor do they tell you which 25 use the term mass grave. What I'm saying, I'm just guessing here, but it's certainly possible that of those 25 that actually use the term mass grave, let's say perhaps could maybe a dozen of them have been highly respected papers with a broad circulation. It's possible. I don't know. But what really grabbed the story for me finally, and made me want to look at it a little bit, is how it ties in to the ability to speak freely, to say what is on your mind, what is free speech, to be able to express an opinion or an idea without fear that you will be censored or retaliated against or have some kind of legal sanction come down to you. The right of freedom of speech or freedom of expression is, according to the UN, it's a basic human right. And many countries claim to have this right as part of their constitution. Certainly the United States is one of those countries that claims that its citizens can speak freely and express their opinions without fear of retaliation, censure, censorship, or some sort of legal sanction. But I think we've all been watching that quickly disappear. And in this talk that I chose to go up, it's one that Alan Watt did on Republic Broadcasting Network in January of 2012, January 19, 2012, and Alan talked about the Darwins and eugenics and sterilizing the unfit and genetically enhancing. And there are a couple of things that are topical that I'm going to cut out to make room for my prattling on, but I will post to the original if you wish to get those stories. One of the reasons when I went keyword searching for one of Alan's talks, he said right in here that right near the end of this, a caller had called in and he said, well, we're not really going to be able to freely say things. That's closing in on us fast. And restricting the internet. This was all going on even back, as far back as 2012. And in this talk, he read a couple of articles that I just want to point out. I'm going to link to them again. Jewish gender segregation campaign turns violent. This is from 2011, December. And it said here, clashes erupted on Monday between police and several hundred ultra-Orthodox Jews from a town near Jerusalem who are campaigning for men and women to be segregated. Israeli police had stepped up their patrols in Beit Shemesh following unrest sparked by discrimination against women imposed by a radical fringe of the town's religious Jews. Several demonstrators were taken in for questioning after police and journalists were roughed up. So the police themselves were roughed up by these ultra-Orthodox men telling them to clear off. There were shouting matches between ultra-Orthodox and secular Jews. The majority of the town's residents are religious Jews, among them a large and growing ultra-Orthodox community. The ultra-Orthodox neighborhood was instructing women to dress modestly in long sleeves and calf-length skirts. Some women who had been out in public had been spat upon by the Orthodox Jewish men. In other words, by members of their own community had spit on them, or they were called whore. So Alan highlighted that article in this talk. And then another interesting one that he read. And this is a story about a Jewish man who was charged with anti-Semitism. It said the NYPD charged a Jewish man with anti-Semitic threats. A Manhattan man was arrested today for making anti-Semitic calls to his mother and other elderly women, and he is also suspected of scrawling hate symbols in a heavily Orthodox Brooklyn neighborhood. David Haddad, 56, of Chelsea, allegedly snarled, "All Jews should die and go to hell," when he called his 80-year-old mother on December 11 at her Brooklyn home. He also went on vitriolic rants when he dialed an 87-year-old woman January 11. Now listen to that thunder coming in, another storm. That's how it's been all week. So it says, Haddad, who is Jewish but not practicing, is also suspected of scribbling hate symbols on 5 apartment doors in a Hell's Kitchen building on January 10. I'll post this. This was part of Alan's talk that he did back in 2012. But what I want to say is that often when we have a story of something that has been done or something that has happened, we don't know how did that get there. How did that swastika get there? Who put the swastika on the gravestone or on the apartment door or on the subway wall? Where did that come from? and why. What we are going through right now are some of the largest student, we're told, student-led demonstrations in decades, pro-Palestinian, anti-Zionist demonstrations that are occurring in university campuses across the U.S., but also in other parts of the world. And one of the things that I've had a conversation with a couple of people about this, I've seen several people make videos that are up online, and they make some assertions that I wanted to get into for myself and look at and just see what I could find. And so to just share with you really quickly, it is said that some of the main groups that are behind the pro-Palestinian protests are Students for Justice in Palestine, an organization entitled Within Our Lifetime, and Jewish Voices for Peace. And these are said to come under the umbrella organization of the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. Now, there's some ties, we're told, to the Tides Foundation, to Soros's, now run by his son Alex Soros, Open Societies. One of the organizations, I don't have it right in front of me, is run by, was founded by a gentleman named Howard Horowitz. And you've got the Rockefeller Brothers Fund in their funding as well. On the right, lots of different politicians and organizations who are saying that this is a hot button one here. The boycott, divestment, and sanctions is a Palestinian-led movement that promotes the idea of boycotts, divestments, economic sanctions against Israel. In other words, hurt Israel in the pocketbook until they meet what is described as their obligation under international law, withdraw from occupied territories, remove separation barriers, allow the Palestinians right of return, which is codified into law but has never been granted to them. This is just one example of something that the conservative politicians in the United States are definitely against, but we can't really make this a left-right, although certainly most Republican politicians in the United States, and that those are on the right, would be said to be supporters of the various Jewish lobbies, such as AIPAC, would tend to be the ones who say, we stand with Israel. Our relationship, our alliance with Israel is ironclad. And then you have different Jewish organizations, such as I just mentioned, Jewish Voices for Peace, who are in support of this Palestinian-led BDS movement that started, well, nearly 20 years ago now. So I just mentioned the article that Alan had read back in 2012 about the clashes that included Orthodox and secular Jews clashing over gender roles and treatment of women in Israel. You don't see necessarily Jewish people or organizations seeing eye to eye on what's going on in Israel right now regarding their war, the war with Gaza. There's not necessarily a uniform opinion. I came upon this article from April 25, 2024 in the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. This was written by a gentleman named Mitch Gruber. Mitch Gruber was born and raised in Rochester, New York. He holds a BA from Binghamton University and a PhD in history from the University of Rochester. He worked as a Head Start teacher for Action for a Better Community. he connected with FoodLink's founder to try and minimize food waste and improve food quality for his students. He eventually went to work for FoodLink, and this work there led him to want to try to find out how to implement better health policies, better anti-poverty programs, etc. And he then got his PhD in food inequality in urban areas. He's married and has a young son and lives in Rochester, and he's in the city council. And he wrote this piece that I said was published in the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. We, in the Israel politics sandwich generation, need our Jewish institutions to change how they define anti-Semitism. I am the only Jewish elected official in Rochester, the third biggest city in New York State. I am 38 years old, which, when it comes to Israel, can feel like the political sandwich generation, old enough to know that Israel was once seen as vulnerable, and young enough to understand that many cannot remember an Israel before Benjamin Netanyahu. The generational differences can feel massive at times, including at this moment when communities like Rochester are struggling to define and explain anti-Semitism. Rochester has a Jewish community of roughly 20,000, with strong, well-resourced institutions. Anti-Semitism lurks here, like it does in many American cities. When an incident occurs, like swastika graffiti appearing in a Jewish cemetery, the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester typically takes the lead to publicly call out anti-Semitism and mobilize the community. The Federation carved out a niche as the leading Jewish institution in the fight against anti-Semitism, even starting a Center to End Hate that strives to unite the community in overcoming hate through education, dialogue, and positive action. But in recent years, and more acutely in recent weeks, the Federation has not kept up with the changing political landscape affecting discussions and definitions of anti-Semitism. In 2019, the Monroe County Republican Party sent out advertisements in support of their candidate for district attorney that included familiar anti-Semitic dog whistles. Now listen up here. The ads depicted George Soros as the, quote, globalist, pulling the strings of the Democratic nominee because he wanted to, quote, buy this election to install a far-left puppet, end quote. Okay? Now, I'm just going to repeat there that Mitch Gruber said those included familiar anti-Semitic dog whistles. What were the dog whistles? Soros is a globalist, and Soros wants to buy the election to install a far-left puppet. Carrying on with what Gruber writes, I shared my anger and concern about this advertisement with the Federation and Center to End Hate leadership. They promised to have private conversations with the GOP leadership, although if they did, they never reported back to me. I co-wrote an op-ed about the subject with a local rabbi and attorney and asked the Federation if they wanted to join. They declined. The GOP never apologized. That's the Republicans' grand old party. GOP never apologized, and the Federation never publicly uttered a word about this anti-Semitism. Last month, the Rochester City Council, like so many other cities across the country, considered a symbolic ceasefire resolution. I was reluctant to welcome international politics into City Hall. When it became clear that a majority of the council wanted to pass a resolution, I decided to get involved in crafting the language to help ensure it did not include anti-Semitic language I had seen in other resolutions. I vetted resolution language with Jewish lay and religious leadership, academics, and Israelis. I sought to avoid some of the specific language that has proven so divisive in the discourse about Israel, like apartheid and genocide, and focus narrowly on the goal of a ceasefire. I discussed the language with the Federation multiple times to get feedback. I did not expect the Federation to be supportive, but I was surprised to learn that they found the idea of a resolution anti-Semitic, regardless of the language. The Federation chose to rally against the idea of a resolution. Leadership sent talking points directly from the Jewish Federations of North America to members of the Jewish community here. These talking points, written far away from Rochester, stated, "The proposed resolutions City Council is being asked to consider are anti-Semitic to their core. The resolutions demonize, they delegitimize, and they apply a double standard to Israel. The three D's of anti-Semitism. If these resolutions are adopted, City Council will be empowering terrorist sympathizers and Jew haters." Gruber writes, "I found the three D's, a formulation popularized by former dissident Nathan Sharansky, to be an odd choice for a definition because it has rarely been cited in the last few months of very public national discourse about anti-Semitism. But even by those standards, the proposed resolution was not anti-Semitic. To many supporters of a ceasefire, it is not a double standard to ask Congress to stop shipping weapons to Israel while Gaza is facing imminent famine and a chronic shortage of medical supplies. I trust that my colleagues would demand the same of any country that was supplied with billions of dollars of armaments from the United States while civilians experienced dire humanitarian crises like famine." Council members received hundreds of comments echoing the Federation's talking points and accusing the entire City Council of anti-Semitism for even considering the resolution. We also received hundreds of comments in favor of a ceasefire resolution, with many commenters citing their Jewish identity and values as reasons for support. Ultimately, the Council approved two non-binding resolutions, including one written and co-sponsored by me. We had a public meeting with so many speakers that it lasted over 5 hours. The meeting affirmed the challenges of being a leader in the sandwich generation. I watched as different generations spoke past each other with anger and sadness in their voice. It reminded me of Peter Beinart's essay in the New York Times about the Great Rupture in American Jewish life. He wrote, "For many American Jews, it is painful to watch their children's or grandchildren's generation question Zionism. It is tempting to attribute all of this to anti-Semitism, even if that requires defining many young American Jews as anti-Semites themselves." The division in Rochester's Jewish community is happening as we speak. It's painful to experience. It must be confusing for our non-Jewish neighbors who are left wondering what is or is not anti-Semitism. And the well-organized institution that once served as a leading voice has squandered credibility to arbitrate anti-Semitism. I share these stories about the Federation's challenges because I suspect they are symptomatic of problems that other Jewish communities are facing today. If Jewish communities cannot properly diagnose anti-Semitism, then we cannot propose real solutions. And if leading Jewish institutions like federations cannot effectively identify anti-Semitism, how can we expect policymakers, community members, and activist groups to help us combat it? This question is central to how we relate to the world around us and how we understand each other within our own community. We, the sandwich generation, have work to do. So this is interesting. The Jewish Federation, the big organization, said, nope, City Council in Rochester cannot do a ceasefire resolution because at the core, that is anti-Semitic. But when Mitch Gruber starts off his article, remember, let's go back and have that paragraph again. In 2019, the Monroe County Republican Party sent out advertisements in support of their candidate for district attorney that included familiar anti-Semitic dog whistles. The ads depicted George Soros as the globalist pulling the strings of the Democratic nominee because he wanted to buy this election to install a far-left puppet. Okay? So Mitch Gruber was angry and concerned about this because, to him, this was a clear piece of anti-Semitism. What I would hope, after reading this article and the fact that he did co-write a ceasefire resolution for the Rochester City Council, is that if I or anyone else spoke with him, that we would be able to have a reasoned, non-emotional conversation about the ad that the Republican Party ran. Because I, not being Jewish, have a hard time understanding why calling George Soros a globalist is anti-Semitic. And I have a hard time understanding why saying that George Soros wanted to buy the election to install a far-left puppet is anti-Semitic. I understand that George Soros is Jewish, but George Soros clearly has global and international interests at heart, not just U.S. interests. This is not anti-Semitic, as far as I can see. And he has definitely, clearly, and unarguably helped install different attorney generals and other state and local officials. And, you know, are they puppets? I don't know. So what we had was this last week, we had a piece of legislation that passed, and this is called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. And this is being framed as something that is going to demonstrate to educators what is anti-Semitism and what isn't. And I think that this is a very scary, a terrifying piece of legislation. Because as I've just read here, Mitch Gruber from the city of Rochester, New York, is telling you that the Jewish people in his community cannot agree on what is anti-Semitism and what is not. The organizations that are the pro-Palestinian organizations that have been characterized as being heavily funded by George Soros and open societies. I don't want to make any sweeping statements about this because it would take an awful lot of homework to prove out anything. What I can say is that we always have to ask ourselves the question, who benefits and why now? Now, one of the things that is being portrayed is that these protesters are very well organized, matching t-shirts, tents, etc., etc. I'm not necessarily sure that that tells me that they're very heavily funded. After all, to be well organized would be a good hallmark for an organization, right? These organizations have been on the go, Students for Justice in Palestine, for more than 30 years. So they ought to know a thing or two about activism. One article, which I will post, because I think we've got to be able to look at everything from all sides now, is something from the Jewish paper called Forward, Jewish independent nonprofit. And this is a very lengthy article, which I won't read because I've already been speaking longer than Alan's going to be speaking in this talk that I give you. It's The Secret History and Uncertain Future of Students for Justice in Palestine. And it's a good article that tells you how, when this organization came to be and why they came to be and so forth. But one of the things that they demonstrate here is the organization and the finances of these organizations. There is a graph about midway through the article, and the graph is entitled Budgets of Major Organizations Involved in Campus Israel Activism. And the graph, everything in blue is pro-Israel, and everything in green is pro-Palestinian. Students for Justice in Palestine operates as a decentralized network with little money, according to current and past leaders. That reflects the overall disparity between pro-Israel and pro-Palestinian groups active in campus politics. Now, on this graph, far and away, the best funded, this is their yearly funding, right? So AIPAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee, funded to the tune of $74 million a year. Hillel International, another Jewish student organization, $58 million. Stand With Us, or Alums for Campus Fairness, Jewish, $23 million. Israel on Campus Coalition, Academic Engagement Network, Jewish organization, $11 million. And AEPI, $5 million. Okay, now the next one on the list is pro-Palestinian, Jewish Voice for Peace, $4 million. The next one is Jewish, Brandeis Center, $3 million. The more or less the remaining ones are pro-Palestinian, and their funding is less than $2 million a year. So they've given you the graph. There it is. Now, the next section says, dark money, questionable partners behind new group fighting anti-Semitism. Those involved in the movement say that these critics misunderstand the network and how it can have such a large impact without significant financial support. National SJP, that's Students for Justice in Palestine, is different from Hillel International, for example, which has an annual budget of nearly $58 million to support campus chapters and whose activities often include student activism supporting Israel. SJP leaders said in interviews that the national group raises less than $100,000 a year to fund travel to a student conference and a national steering committee retreat, but the local chapters are typically financed by student government activity fees of a few thousand dollars on each campus. We don't have mass funding backing us. Our power comes from the bottom up. National SJP is not a registered nonprofit, so it's financial information is not public. It accepts tax-deductible donations through the Westchester Peace Action Committee Foundation, a charity that serves as the fiscal sponsor for a number of pro-Palestinian organizations. And they outline that. That's through the, what I just said. The Westchester Peace Action Committee Foundation is WestPAC. And they do a lot. They're kind of like a funding clearinghouse. On the face of it, despite everything that's circulating out there about how heavily funded the pro-Palestinian organizations are by Soros and the like, on the face of it, the pro-Palestinian protesters certainly don't appear to be rolling in cash. But I'm going to separate that issue out for just a moment to say that why now? Why now? And kind of a cautionary that we shouldn't be so quickly pulled into the debate on one side or another. Clearly, there are forces at work, which Alan simply and beautifully, sometimes referred to in Ronald Storr's autobiography about the creation, about the Balfour Declaration, when he said, and the creation of Israel, we are creating an Ulster in the Middle East. So for more than 100 years, those in geopolitics, those that we're reading about in Tragedy and Hope Book Club, have known what they were doing in that region and what it would create. You can take Wesley Clark's list with a grain of salt or not, or you can look at the constant drumbeat against Iran and its proxies. We get mainstream articles on a regular basis now decrying anti-Semitism or whipping people up into an anti-Semitic frenzy. And I think we just have to step back regularly and say, who benefits, who benefits, who benefits? The less we charge into the fray, because look, there's more than 34,000 dead Palestinians in Gaza. We're told that they are starving. There's something terrible going on, and we have, I'm sorry to say it, but in Netanyahu just behaved, he comes across like a madman, like, and I think that's what he's supposed to come across, you know, bloodthirsty, vengeful madman. So that's on the one side. And somehow, as all of this goes on, Russia and China and Iran are brought in. You know, I saw a mainstream article just today that said that these campus protests are giving Russia, China, and Iran the fuel that they need to exploit the U.S. divide. And I was participating in a conversation with a few people just today that was talking about why now does Elon Musk bring Nick Fuentes back to X, a controversial right-wing, far-right political commentator who's been called a white nationalist. Why now is he being reinstated? So free speech doesn't necessarily mean, what I'm saying is, it shouldn't necessarily mean to you the right to say, oh, I hate this group of people, or this group of people is all bad and they should go, and I'm for white this or that. It's just so easy to see. When I looked at these articles about the mass graves, whether the mass graves are real, if you don't think that they are, then you might be a far-right white nationalist, because that's how they've been characterized in Canada. It's just the big picture view that, we have to continue to do, and we really need to do it now because the stakes are very high. It's too easy to get sucked up in the emotions of the story. And like I say, in all sincerity, I would hope that if I had the occasion to talk to Mitch Gruber, I could ask him, in all sincerity, why is it anti-Semitic to call George Soros a globalist? And I would hope that I would listen and hear. Because if we cannot talk to people with very, very different attitudes and different outlooks, and then listen to them, then there is not a hope. Then we are sitting ducks for people to ride in and say, well, obviously anti-Semitism is on the rise in America. Obviously this bill is necessary, and more like it yet to come. So if you don't want to be part of the problem, then you need to arm yourself with patience and the ability to listen carefully and allow other people to speak. I hope that you all have a good week, and I'll be back. Take care.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 19th of January 2012. For newcomers, as always, I suggest you look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and help yourself to the free audios which are there for download. There's over 1,000 now. And hopefully you'll start to understand this big system you're born into. I call it the matrix because there's so many levels of it. There's so many levels of deception. And each room that you walk into, basically, just like the movie, it says, this is the real thing. This is all there is to it. There's no more than this. And of course, there's much, much more because we've been brought up in perfected deception. And it's a form of scientific control designed a long time ago by experts, again, people who studied society, the individuals, and how to manipulate them a long, long time ago. It's an old science governing people, but and knowledge is never lost. It's passed on down through the ages. So help yourself to the audios and find out how the world is really run and who really runs it too, because it's certainly not the guys that you elect. They're simply there to sign bills and do what they're told. I've recommended the books by Carl Quigley so many times, like Tragedy and Hope and the Anglo-American Establishment. He was the historian for the Council on Foreign Relations. He got into their archives, and he wrote about this quite happily because he believed in it all. He didn't think it should remain secret anymore, and because it had changed the course of history in such a massive way, he thought it was time the public knew about it. So he published the books and gave a lot out into the realm of the public domain. So, as I say, you can help me keep going too, by the way, by buying the books and discs I have at cuttingthroughthematrix.com from the US to Canada. You can use a personal check, an international postal money order, or PayPal. You can send cash as well. Donations are really, really welcome. Because really it's not a matter of numbers accumulating and the word spreading until people understand. After they understand what's wrong, then they've got to decide what to do about it, because the future has been planned for us all. Planned for us all, kept quiet from the general public. And you have to start using your own reasoning power. When you get the information from like the CFR, for instance, or the United Nations, and we're signing treaties all the time, to globalize us, pull us more into line under the auspices of the United Nations, you've got to start doing your own reasoning and say, my God, they're actually doing this. They're not going to say, yes, we're taking over the world. But if you read it, you find out that's exactly what they are saying in their own language. So, and that's when too all the different bills and laws that are passed make sense to you. Your local media, your mainstream, that's all owned by guys in the Council on Foreign Relations, are not going to tell you or spell this out for you. Now, even Albert Pike said the same thing, the Grand Master of Freemasonry. Those who will not use their own reasoning are just beasts of burden and meat on the table by choice and consent. A lot of truth in that, you know, an awful lot of truth in that, because most people don't want their bubble burst. They want to believe, being good socialized little subjects, they want to believe that Big Daddy is taking care of them all. So much history to all of this world order, so many organizations that work together, so many specialized departments, all incredibly well funded by the big guys that just print up the money anyway. So it's quite easy to control the world when you're in control of the money. Everything runs on money, and governments go cap in hands to whatever central bank they've been given and borrow it all the time. That's why the bankers love continuous welfare and things like that, because they make money off interest, of course, massive interest as well. So that's really how the whole system works. But it's more than just a system. It's to bring it in to a totally controlled society, the perfected society, where they can depopulate eventually and bring in the right kind of people to serve them, the better types of peasants who won't need entertainments and won't have to get money to spend on themselves and treat themselves and things like that, you see. That's quite practical to the psychopathic mind. And, of course, there's lots of them at the top. That's how they got up there in the first place. So part of this is eugenics. Big part is eugenics, and I've done quite a lot of talks in the past on the radio to do with eugenics. It's history. And, of course, it all started really, it didn't start with Darwin. It took off with Darwin. He was put out there just like Freud was put out at the right time to change their views, especially in religion, and to give power in the hands of scientists. That's what Darwin was popped out there for at that time, because basically his so-called treatise, etc., that he put out there, his book on eugenics, as we call it today, or, you know, the most favored nations, or races, he called it himself, you know, and hereditary factors. That's an old thing. Even his grandfather was into that. He wrote the same kind of book pretty well and didn't publish it and passed it on, the job on to his grandson. The Darwins were one of the most interbred families out there. They only intermarried with the Wedgwood family for generations until most of the offspring ended up in the loony bin or died prematurely. So anyway, doesn't stop them, of course, and they talked about it at that time, hereditary traits. They believed that everyone had a poverty gene in the 1900s and the 20th century. And in the US, when steamrolling ahead, it broke the ground by basically sterilizing what they called the unfit, an idea that was grabbed by Adolf Hitler later on. And he actually pointed out that the US had been doing it for years. And they were doing it right up into the 1970s, I believe, in some of the states there too. And they're talking about doing it again, eh? So anyway, there's other ways to sterilize the public. You just put it in something in their food and down it goes. And that's happening now. But anyway, they always tell you they want to improve the stock. You see, we are in the stock. That's why you have a stock market too. It's for animals, you see. And that's why you have bear markets and bull markets and you never have a human market. But anyway, it says that researchers have secured £6 million in funding to develop the groundbreaking treatment which could prevent, it's always to prevent something because they just care about us so much, genetic conditions affecting the heart, muscle or brain being passed on to children and future generations. It's always to help us, you know. But the method is controversial because it involves transferring the parent's DNA into a donor egg, meaning the resulting child would inherit a tiny fraction of the genetic coding from a third party. This is eugenics coming into, again, the perfecting of the species or the cattle at the bottom. It says, and it's who's doing it? Well, they're getting funded by privates and no doubt government money as well. The Wellcome Trust and Newcastle University. Wellcome Trust came from the Wellcome pharmaceutical industry. And Newcastle University has announced a £5.8 million package for further lab-based research aimed at assessing the safety of the technique. It came as the Department of Health ordered a public consultation whether the technology should be moved from the lab to patients, which will allow, followed by a Commons debate, that's the parliamentary debate, on the ethics of the issue. So here you have a bunch of psychopaths that crawled and bribed their way into power on behalf of their bosses, of course, going to decide the ethics of the issue about really deciding who is fit, who is unfit to produce children, and eventually, maybe in 5-10 years, the order will go out. They'll tell you that a court will decide if you can or cannot. They've been after this one for a long time. I don't know if you've seen the movie Gattaca, the sci-fi movie of a slightly ahead future, not too far off, where you have another class system comes into it because they call it genetic enhancement. Sounds awfully snobbish and good. Oh, I've been enhanced genetically. And of course, that creates a better class or a more preferred class of employees for top positions. Anyways, as the health sector has the power to lift the regulations, and if both scientific and political criteria are satisfied, the therapy could be trialed in humans within 2 to 3 years. Research is aimed at tackling diseases passed down through families via mutated mitochondria structures which supply power to cells. I love the baby talk they give to the commoners. It supply power to cells. You know, there's a lot more than that. It says, although 99.8% of our DNA, including all our visible characteristics, is inherited evenly from our father and mother and stored in the nucleus of cells, a tiny fraction resides in the mitochondria and is passed down only by the mother. Faults in the mitochondria affects about 1 in 200 children in Britain each year, causing severe and curable diseases such as muscular dystrophy or ataxia in about 1 in 6,500 people. And researchers at Newcastle believe they've developed a method which could prevent this particular group of diseases being transmitted and potentially wipe them out within a generation. So Professor Doug Turnbull, who was leading the research, said, the important thing is that this has a possibility of stopping the disease completely. Sounds wonderful, like all the things they come out with, like vaccines and stuff, eh? I mean, we have autism skyrocketing, boom. If this technique proves to be as safe as IVF and as effective as preliminary studies show, I think we could totally prevent the transmission of disease and so on and so on. So anyway, three parties would be necessary for it, and two mothers, basically. And they're really pushing this out there. But the idea is, too, is to alter other things as well, because mitochondria has a lot more than just supplying power or energy to the rest of the DNA. And it's opposed by groups who oppose embryo research and claim genetic engineering can result in serious defects, it says here, too. And the Society for Protection of Unborn Children described experiments as macabre and unethical. But they should, why don't they go into the whole plan of eugenics? I don't understand these groups are out there to protect us. You think they're out there to protect us. Because there's so many books put out by big boys themselves, like Bertrand Russell, who says it'll be the chance to tinker with genes. To supply the right kind of citizenship or citizens for the ruling class will be irresistible. Of course it's irresistible. They want to have you all like little, you know, drooling fools that just work, yes sir, yeah boss, okay boss, you know, that's what they want. So it says anyway, so they're pushing this forward ahead into human trials now, and this will be picked up in other countries very quickly as well, and away they'll go. And whatever they tell the parents, that's all you have to say. Well, your child may, or it may not, come down with Huntington's chorea. And of course, that'll terrify them. And once they're in there, believe you me, they can do more than just tinker with the mitochondria. They can't help themselves. You know, there's been more quiet experiments done on the human population through the health faculties than any other system. They don't tell you to years and years later what they've been tampering with and experimenting with. But again, it's up to the people concerned too. The general public will never hear this unless it's on the mainstream, and that I can't see that happening. If it does, it'll be hailed as a godsend, you know, or whatever it is they worship. Now, tonight too, I'll put up a repeal the Climate Change Act for Britain, because it's going to wreck what's left of any economy it has and tax the bejesus out of who's left to tax. There's hardly anyone left to tax. The people literally are taxed to the hilt. It's just disgusting what's happening. Also in Canada, one article here. You don't get many articles from Canada because they tell us that nothing much happens here. You see, you're really a colony in Canada. Colonial peoples in Australia too, as you can see, are socialists. They've been trained to be socialist, and they get little decrees once in a blue moon coming down from the top, and it's a straight, harsh decree, and there's no debating, nothing, it's just done. And that's how colonies are run in the past. The Romans were the same. And so you end up with a population that's pretty easy going, okay, so what? And they just go along with everything that comes down the pike. And but once in a while, little things creep out, which is nothing much, really. I think they just tell us what things are happening once in a while because there's no more other news to give us. You know, it says here, a federal agency created by the Harper government with great political fanfare in 2008 is costing millions of dollars to achieve pretty much nothing. Well, that's like a lot of government, really, isn't it? There's just one department. The Canada Employment Insurance Financing Board has just about everything a budding government agency could want. So far, it's spent over $3.3 million for new offices, computers, and furniture, well-paid executives and staff, travel budgets, expense accounts, board meetings, and lots of pricey consultants. All that's missing is a reason for it to exist at all, because they haven't done anything. It says here, the Conservative government set up the agency ostensibly to perform three main functions. It tells you the functions and so on, but then the government just carried on as normal as though it didn't exist. And so nothing was suggested from this agency. Nothing's been done by this agency. I think no suggestion they put in probably for a pay raise. And that's pretty well, that's like the main, this is main stuff in Canada. This is big stuff for Canadians, you know. Poor, big stuff coming from the guys at the top. Now, I've mentioned fracking before, this fracking thing that sounds awful like something else, as you well know, and I'm sure it's by on purpose. But anyway, it's where they pump various chemicals and compressed airs into the ground. They fracture different layers or levels of basically shale, as they call it. And it's supposed to release gas. And a lot of it's used now as natural gas. That's what they call it, natural gas. But it can leave a mess on the ground too. And there's two sides to this thing, both equally liable to tell you lies. So it's hard to make out what to do, except the fact is that they do know that fracking's mobilizing uranium to come up out the ground by fracking's a lot of the uranium shales that's actually there. This is from a university test that they've done. Back with more after this. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix, talking about this fracking where they pump stuff into the ground, a lot of chemicals, etc., and the gas is released eventually and that's utilized for domestic use, for heating and cooking and all the rest of it. So anyway, there's two sides, I say, to the story, and this particular research comes from the University of Buffalo, and they say that fracking mobilizes uranium in Marcellus Shale, as the research has found. UB geologist Tracy Bank and colleagues found that uranium and hydrocarbons in Marcellus Shale are not just physically but also chemically bound background. And that shows you the photographs of the things, or the big thing. And it comes also with different photographs of the whole lot. Scientific and political disputes over drilling Marcellus Shale for natural gas have focused primarily on the environmental effects of pumping millions of gallons of water and chemicals deep underground to blast through rocks to release the natural gas. But University at Buffalo researchers have now found that the process called hydraulic fracturing or fracking also causes uranium that is naturally trapped inside Marcellus Shale to be released, raising additional environmental concerns. It's interesting too that the thyroid cancers, etc., that you're finding, and I mentioned them the other day there, are most of them, the highest number of them are concentrated in Pennsylvania and New York State, and around the Great Lakes area there too. There's so many nuclear plants around there. So you don't know where it's all coming from. It's probably all combined. The whole lot's combined together. Anyway, it goes on about the Marcellus Shale, the massive rock formation that stretches from New York through Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia, which is often described as the nation's largest source of natural gas. So apparently metals such as uranium and at levels higher than usually found naturally are found there, but lower than man-made contamination levels, says Tracy Bank, PhD, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're pumping the stuff in and the stuff's coming out, and, well, that's it. Yeah, I really don't think, you know, that the populations, and this is my personal opinion, in America and Canada are really meant to last forever. That's the impression I get. I really do get that. As mentioned years ago on the air, that when I first came to the country and went from north to south, I noticed that everything looked like it was jerry-rigged, just thrown up fast and temporarily too. All the wooden houses the workers had from the 50s and 60s, and power lines just hanging on, really hanging low too, and in some areas across streets and everything. And I thought, this is a temporary, all of this is temporary. And we know too, the Friends of the Earth and others have said that eventually they want all industry gone from America, from the US, and that it would really help the habitat, etc., etc. They really hate humanity. They really are friends of, the dirt. But, they don't like people very much at all. And other top people have said the same kind of things. And they can really remove these wooden houses we all live in very quickly and easily and take down the wires, etc., and return it back. So I really think we've got a job to do, and that's the only reason we're here, actually. Remember these big boys at the top planning centuries? That's what they do, planning centuries. And that's the impression I have. So anyway, we're getting poisoned in hundreds of ways, of course, deliberately, and they all know what they're doing, and so we'll just have to wait and see. So anyway, this fracking business, I know it creates a lot of chemicals too, and of course they've got to try and get rid of those chemicals once they've pumped it underground. Where does it go from there? It goes into, obviously it goes into the water. One way or another it works its way. Water doesn't just sit there at one level, it goes up and down like a yo-yo with its own internal hydraulic action. Anyway, that's that for fracking. And a bit of, how they're going over all the propaganda to do with the wars in the Middle East. And we even had at the beginning of it too. Oh, they make the women wear the veil, the burqa, and all this kind of stuff. And here's what happened in Israel. It's kind of funny in some ways. It says, clashes erupted on Monday between police and several hundred ultra-Orthodox Jews from a town near Jerusalem who were campaigning for men and women to be segregated, an AFP journalist said. Israeli police had stepped up their patrols in Beit Shemesh following unrest sparked by discrimination against women imposed by a radical fringe of the town's religious Jews. Several demonstrators were taken in for questioning after police and journalists were roughened up. They actually roughened up the police and insulted by ultra-Orthodox men, telling them to clear off, the journalist said. They're also shouting matches between ultra-Orthodox and secular Jews. Residents of Beit Shemesh, a town of some 80,000 people 30 kilometers west of Jerusalem, showered police and television crews with eggs and also set fire to refuse bins. The majority of the town's residents are religious Jews, amongst them a large and growing ultra-Orthodox community. Police spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld said one policeman was slightly hurt by a thrown stone and had placards and all the rest of it. But the whole thing is to do with women aren't supposed to walk past the synagogues, especially when they're wearing knee-length skirts and stuff. They're not dressed in traditional long dresses, etc. It's not the done thing. It says, other signs posted in an ultra-Orthodox neighborhood instructed women to dress modestly in long sleeves and calf-length skirts. They started off, apparently, a couple of weeks ago when they started spitting at a woman passing and called her a whole bunch of nasty names because she like whore, etc., you know. The Hretz newspaper said that cameraman from the commercial station Channel 2 was thrown to the ground. It's quite a scuffle, eh? And his sound recorders grabbed by the throat and attacked by the ultra-Orthodox men. Anyway, it goes on and on about them. They don't even want to be in the same bus together, etc. I mean, this is gender separation. Now, I'll go to the callers now and I'll try to get up the screen here. It takes a second. And we've got Alex from Victoria on the line there. Are you there, Alex?
Hi, Alan.
Yes.
How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging. I got a foot of snow today.
Yeah, we got a ton out here, too. We tried to film the weather systems before they made it fall. It was like a lot of metal oxide in the sky and other things, plasma, et cetera.
Yep, and, the usual.
down came more snow than I've ever seen here.
Well, it certainly was. It certainly dumped itself here, too. Yep.
Yeah. I was very interested to hear you talking about the things you're just talking about, but I wanted to ask you what the G represents in the Masonic symbol.
It's a whole bunch of meanings on different levels of degrees. And they always tell them a partial truth and then another partial truth until you get to the top. But some of them will say geometry, of course, because they give you the compass. That's for the ones at the bottom. But you'll also go into gnosis, you know, like Gnostics, and you also get into the generative power, and it's really the generative power that runs the world or plans the world, the grand architect, the great architect, and it's also for grand, you know,
right. Right.
That's the key, is that they plan the future, they work in the communities, they work in business, they work in government. They're all dedicated to international, that's the key, brotherhood. And their job is to help plan the future. So really it's to do with both Gnosis and as I say, the generative power, yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm designing a logo and it's got the geometry with the a pyramid with the eye in the center, which is actually the G upside down, bleeding. Mm-hmm. And that's the center of the eyeball, and then the pyramid is that right there, and then so the G is the center of it, and then the compass and the other part of the square is forming sort of like a star of David or something, and there it is. So yeah, it's looking really good, and I'm going to use that as a logo and put it up on T-shirts, the net, bumper stickers, all that stuff.
Well, when you get the compass, the compass when it's open also represents the male with his legs apart. And of course, you have the square at the bottom represents the female The Earth.
Yeah, I got that from reading your Cutting yeah. Through Volume 1, and
that's right.
I've now lent it to a friend, and I'm going to go pick it up and give her Volume 2, and I'm yeah. reading that again.
So it shows you the sexual aspect and the eugenical aspect, because they put a lot of emphasis in the higher Masonic, even the lower ones are advised too, if they're single, to really be very careful who they marry, because the offspring is very important. And not to just let your usual lusts carry you away. So, and if, in fact, if you're very good, the Grand Master will introduce you to your wife down the road. And it's the third generation that they want, again, to generate in the generations. The third one will, is automatic. He can join much younger as a full-fledged Grand Master, very young, if it's a third generation Mason. And because it's definitely a eugenical program, and a lot of their books really go into that in much more detail. They follow the same old system that's still used, of course, with some sects in Judaism, where they'll actually supposedly copulate on the special days of the moon and all that kind of stuff. I mean, no kidding. I mean, this is in some of their books. And the same with the Rosicrucians. They make a big deal of this kind of stuff for conception. So there's many, many layers to it. It would take hours to go through each layer, though, but that's basically it, yeah.
Well, good. Maybe I'll write you an email. Maybe if you can, if you feel like it, if you ever get time, maybe make a little piece that I can flip around to people that are very curious, so as we don't take up your time over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
We know the Internet's coming down. It's looking, they've got a new thing on YouTube, so our YouTube channel is being really heavily censored, but they're about to force a change in the construction of the sites
yes.
so that they're completely useless, and they work in a vertical thing where you don't see all the information at once, and it's completely, it's really blatantly obvious that it's just making it so much less effective.
That's the same here. It's the same here. It's taking me three times longer just to pull up different sites right here now. And
right,
actually,
yep.
You see, it wasn't just one bill they put through, and folk are missing this one as well. Canada and the U.S., when they signed the last trading bill together, also had that in it too, months before these present bills you're hearing of now. And so they're cooperating together under the site websites that can that are causing hate, discontent, or could be involved in terrorism, because terrorism is now expanding to include opinions, basically. You know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of terrorists, I went to the treasonous premier's health, quote-unquote, care conference.
Yeah.
And we did a media thing and a YouTube clip outside there, and I was dressed up like an independent examiner, like an ICBC, WCB insurance hack, mm-hmm. with blood on my hands, a white coat, and I had a construction hat with a skull and bones, and then it said ICBC and WCB underneath it. ICBC is the Insurance Corporation of British Columbia, and we all know who WCB is. And I did a speech out there in front of their media gong show. Their media muppets set up the cameras, and where the political puppets were supposed to come out and tell us the next solution, quote-unquote, to the health crisis.
Yeah.
And we had about 30 people there, and I was standing there, and, you know, we blocked the camera and the shot of Victoria Harbor and told the truth while they all sat in there lying and stuff. I came back and tried to post that to YouTube. It took 8 hours to get it up there with the annotations and the tags. It took an hour and a half just to settle on some tags that I think the intelligence community would only allow. They wouldn't let us write what I kept writing. And
yeah.
and it was almost like we were arguing about it. So the kids yeah. and I witnessed that. And during that entire eight-hour period of time, Aiden's heart was squeezed right up, like just like he was having a heart attack almost. It was just dreadful.
Sure. Well, that last bill they passed with the pact between Canada and the U.S. allows the U.S. military, and I get the hits all the time, I've been having them for years, from Fort Meade in different places. It comes up on my firewall, you see. They can actually, it allows them now to go after Canadians as well.
Yeah. Oh, they're doing it all right. And they're using the most advanced electronic technology and whatever else to divide and conquer us. And we found that there's a ray of hope, because we were talking to the detectives and the security guards around there. The security guards said that they were pissed off because during the lead-up to the 2010 Olympics, they actually had to frog march reporters out of the news conference for asking tough questions, and
yeah,
they were
well,
disgusted.
Yeah. Well, that's Canada. That is Canada, yeah.
Yeah, and another thing was We tried to walk in dressed up in costume and character, and we of course were ejected right away, and they were very concerned. We had a jug of water with us, and we're about to search. They asked my daughter what it was, and she's like, water? So the guy says, who are you? And I said, I'm the independent examiner. I'm here to say if you get hurt at work, I'll say whatever's wrong with you isn't, or it would have been whether you were in that accident or not. He said, okay, get out of here. This is private property.
Yep. Well, I know that Canada's answer to the healthcare crisis will be the same as Britain. They'll give you a pill for euthanasia, because I mean, that's where it's going. That's where it's going.
Yeah, we talked about that. I put the thing up on my YouTube channel. It's called Joker Tattoo, with three O's on the end of it. Yeah. And I'm the Canadian Coalition of the Walking Wounded and American Coalition of the Walking Wounded president and co-founder.
Yeah.
And so we showcased, like, injured workers, auto accidents, patient claimants, veterans, and vaccination-damaged children and families who are being destroyed by the government, and made a point of telling the truth about what they're really doing in there. Talked about GMO, advanced military medicine, rationed health care, and stereotypical clinical commentary used to deny people diagnosis and treatment. So we
Do you know that Canada, people don't realize Canada, our tax money, for years, long before this redistribution of the wealth idea came along, Canada, we've got RCMP working in Haiti and countries in Africa, RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. We also have stacks of lawyers we send over to places like Rwanda right now, and we train them in their legal system. We all pay for all this stuff across the whole planet. Canadians don't even know what they're paying for or where the money's going. And the Rwandans recently were looking for a place to get a fair hearing. They said that the court system was too corrupt. Where could they go? And someone suggested Canada, and he says, well, can't go there because it's the Canadian system that came over and set up our system. What does that tell? What does it say to Canada about our system? Eh? We gave them a corrupt system.
It's clearly a master-slave society.
Oh, it is, absolutely, yeah.
Thanks for everything you do. I won't take up too much of your time. I'll let other callers come in, and okay. Thanks a lot for everything you're doing, and We'll keep you posted.
Okay, thanks for calling. Yeah.
Thanks, brother.
Okay, now there's Carl from New York. Are you there, Carl?
Hey, what's up, Mr. White? How you doing?
Oh, hanging in here. I see I've got a foot of snow here, and I guess most folk down there haven't got it yet.
Yeah, you're talking about snow down here. Matter of fact, a little early, it was doing a little flurrying, but it stopped. I'm glad it did. Just along the lines of the symbolism,
mm-hmm.
With the last call I was talking about,
yeah.
I kind of see that if you can kind of like, well, basically, the Masonic square and compass with the Z in the middle, to me, corresponds with the three major religions, or the three symbols of the three major religions of the world, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if, like, because, I mean, you got the crescent moon, Islam, and the star. Star being the genitive principle. You know, the moon, the female principle, or whatever.
Sure.
You already see the star at David. You already know how that is.
That's right. That's my book, actually. I put it out there, yeah.
Say that again?
One of my books, I put it out there. I show you if you do the square and compass, and you just carry it on. Yeah, you've got the Star of David there. Yeah, that's where it comes from.
Right, and with the cause of Christianity, I was just thinking, like, when you overlap the actual square and compass on it, mm-hmm. of course Jesus died on the middle of the cross. He was crucified on the middle of the cross. That being the Son of the G, the genetic principle. Mm-hmm. But I was just thinking about that. You talked about fracking a little bit earlier too. I don't know if you've ever heard of or seen this documentary called Gasland.
Oh yeah, I did see that. But unfortunately, he fudged it a bit. He didn't have to, but he went and did it. He fudged it a bit because the places he was testing for methane in the water, in your drinking water, they've had that for since the 1930s there. Naturally.
Wow.
Yeah, so he fudged it, and he kind of ruined it by going that far when he didn't have to go that far. The chemicals are bad enough that's getting pumped in, never mind anything else, you know. Yeah.
Right. But that's pretty much all I had for you. But I'll holler at you, probably send you something a couple of weeks or something for your next book, or the third part of the series, and you take it easy and try to stay warm up there too.
I will do. And you too. And I hope you don't get the snow.
I hope not too. I'm not going to shovel anything.
No, it's a bit much. It's a bit much. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And there's also Judy from Florida. Are you there, Judy?
Hi, Alan.
Hi. Oh, hi. Hold on, and we'll get to you when we come back from the break. Hi, folks. We're back, cutting through the matrix and talking to Judy from Florida. Are you there, Judy?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, go ahead.
Basically, lately I've been observing people, and I'm kind of, concerned about how I see, just artificial behavior, or, people just, they're not natural with each other. I mean, and a lot of it has to do with just walking simply into a grocery store, something that you need to do. And, it just seems like everything is done by a script for market share.
Yeah.
And that gets really tiresome at times. And just also the fact that you can't talk about, they say you can't talk about religion or politics. And mm-hmm. I do in my circles, but, when you tiptoe into certain subjects that, you have to. Nowadays, I mean,
yes.
You're completely shut down. And I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but it's just the fact that there's a quickening occurring.
Yes.
And as far as, where we're headed. And, I know my concerns for myself. I mean, I've made some of the correct preparations. It's just that, I don't know how much of it is, zombieism or how much of it is actual fear, and how effective that fear is in keeping people from critically thinking.
You've actually hit on it, because people don't realize that under actual warfare, there's only so much stress we can take before people literally start to sag, their psyche sags, you might say, and they're prone to more propaganda. And then what's actually happening is behavior modification. Now, there's so many sites out there. I've got some up here. I didn't have time to read them tonight, but it's from United Nations again, and from organizations affiliated with the United Nations to do with behavior modification for a healthy population, they call it, across the world. And they admit straight out off the bat that they're in the business of behavior modification. Now, it's heightened. It's easier to remodify the behavior of people during times of war, stress, financial war, whatever, economic stress. All of those things combined, it's ideal right now. And when you also know, it's even worse in Britain, but when you know too, there's cameras everywhere, just you knowing that there's cameras everywhere, that also makes you behave differently. You're not spontaneous. You know you're on camera. You're automatically readjusting your psyche because you know you're being watched and listened to as well. But you're quite right. And then it filters into, as you say, friends or people around you, where there's certain topics you don't go. That's where angels fear to tread, as they say, because people are now scared if it comes up, and as though they've committed a crime by even hearing you talk about something, which is crazy, because every topic should be discussed. If you can't discuss any topic, you don't have freedom at all. There's something wrong there, and you're under a form of tyranny. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's terrifying in that right now. I mean, in the UK, I've heard talk about essentially people have they regret the fact they've had to give up their guns, whether they were for sport or for protection,
yeah.
And so they've got this subdued society.
Yeah.
There's no more time for us to talk. I can hear the music now.
But you're quite right. So all they have left now is the food to keep them going, and that'll be rationed too. That's the next stick that's coming along. But thanks for calling. You're quite right. From Hamish, myself, Ontario, Canada, it's good night. Samir, God of your gods, go with you.